Podcast.
Are we saying podcast?
Welcome back. Two fanboys and a filthy casual back at you. Once again, this is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
This is Harold.
We are here to talk about a couple things, but you know me, when it's me, it's only a couple things that I'm really excited about. First and foremost is Rocky. I love Rocky. The other one is Will Smith. And it just so happens that we get to talk about Will Smith the first two.
We got some Will Smith content.
I know. But surprisingly, that's not the only thing we're talking about today. But let's start it off. Are we going good news or bad news over here?
Let's start with some good news. Let's be positive today.
Okay, let's be positive. Well, first and foremost, Harold and Lewis just showed me, literally like seconds ago, the trailer to Bad Boys 3, Bad Boys for Life.
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys think about it?
What did you think about it?
I'm so excited.
You have to stop smiling.
which, by the way, it's one of those few times where I can say that I actually like Martin Lawrence.
You don't like Martin Lawrence?
I'm not a big Martin Lawrence fan. His shtick of like being the pathetic, you know, like in movies. I mean, I've heard his stand-up. It's actually pretty funny. But when it's the movies, he's kind of typecasted.
As Big Mama?
Exactly. Which is why I love that movie.
Yeah. Part 2.
Big Mama 2 is pretty damn good. But, wow. You know, like for this one, it's every single movie, it's kind of like he was, what's his name? What's the guy who just injured his back? The short comedian, the really famous
comedian. Oh, Kevin Hart.
He's proto Kevin Hart.
He was Kevin Hart before, yeah, that's, you know. True. And then now that's what Kevin Hart has basically become. He's become a shorter, you know, Martin Lawrence.
But Martin, there's no, you can't compare their careers because Kevin Hart is way crappier than Martin Lawrence. Martin Lawrence made The Black Knight.
Pretty solid. I like
Black Knight. See?
I was gonna get you to say that, but I did. You like it? I mean, it's one of those shows that when it's on TBS or TNT, like, it's like, alright, we're gonna stop. We're gonna stop, guys. We're stopping.
But yeah, I actually quite enjoyed it. I did not check since this is the first time I've seen it. Is Michael Bay the director?
No, he's not.
Okay. Oh, okay. I was going to say, there was so many explosions,
yeah,
that I was kind of expecting it to be a Michael Bay production.
Yeah, it's got a fast car to start, mm-hmm, off, peeling, or, you know, cars peeling off and explosions. So it felt very Michael, yeah, Bay. I didn't know, yeah, that. Okay.
Well, the director is a different director. His name is Miguel Bay.
It is based in Miami.
Yeah, so, yeah. So is no, the Cuban equivalent?
He came on a boat.
Wow. Films. Hey, we can talk about people that come on the boat. So, you know, we're good.
That's
but we, I mean, Lewis. But yeah, I'm, to be honest with you, I was a big Will Smith fan. I enjoyed both Bad Boys 1 and Bad Boys 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gabriel Union?
Gabriel Union, part, mm-hmm, 2.
Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing actress. Great career. But, you know, just there's something about that series that I quite enjoy, and so I'm really excited about
it. Yeah, I'm glad they're still playing off the whole, obviously, you know, Mike Lowry, or, you know, Will Smith's Mike Lowry is still the cool guy, and, you know, and Martin Lawrence is still playing the, you know, the,
I'm getting too old for,
yeah,
this.
He's, yeah, gonna play that
he's
role.
He's become Danny Glover. And now he's the same age as Danny Glover.
He looks pretty good, though, if he's trying to pull that out, but it looks like he's still doing
except that first part where he was, like, scrunched up, and you can see, like, his, like,
all the fat in his face.
Yeah.
Oh, the second, third chins. I guess my only thing that really concerns me about this is that quick little introduction that they're, like, showing these young guys, and that seems to be the trend with these movies lately, is the old stalwarts are introducing or showing off these new kids. I'm like, I don't know if they're going to try to do a Bad Boys franchise.
I hope not,
dude, because it lives and dies with these two. You know, the fun of the series has been their interaction, you know, like the silly little things that they do in the first two movies is what made the movies, you know, classics in a sense. So, looking forward to more of their interaction. I think, not to jump ahead, but I think Will Smith definitely needs a W soon. Sooner than later, and hope, and this looks like it. I think it's coming out early next year or Thanksgiving.
I'm not sure.
Like,
okay. 1/17/20, I think.
Did it already memorize it?
Tickets bought.
I don't know. I'm kind
before
of
Star Wars. You know,
I'm still kind of on the fence on this, only because I hated Bad Boys 2. I'm not gonna lie.
Really?
Because I love Bad Boys. Oh, dude. Okay, so this is when I watched Bad Boys 2 the first time. I always remember it's the Titanic of action movies. It is overly long. It is almost 3 hours long. There is approximately 10 car chases in the movie.
Mm-hmm. So far, I'm waiting for the best. You get almost 3 hours of Will Smith. Okay. Go on.
And then, you know, that's pretty much my complaint. Like, the first Bad Boys is so much fun. You know, we're with Martin Lawrence pretending he's Mike Lowry. Like,
yes.
This is and then Will Smith getting to do the Will Smith stuff. So I thought that dynamic and then the action scenes in that movie were so much fun. And then Michael Bay went into super Michael Bay mode, and he just like tried to cram as much crap into that movie. So I'll watch it, but I'm not like I never bothered buying it on DVD or anything. But this one looks a lot more streamlined. Hopefully, the joke about where did all these helicopters keep coming from made me crack up pretty hard. Because
yeah,
I thought it was a Michael Bay movie at first, and I was like, he's got a good point. Where does all this artillery keep coming from?
So wait, is it, I'm just looking
to attack the Miami
police. Is it
police.
A Michael Bay movie?
No, it's not. I think it's two new directors. I don't want to butcher their names, but they are
Miguel and Bayo.
Yeah. Scott Bayo.
Scott's brother.
Congratulations. Julio and Miguel.
But I was reading the IMDb. I didn't catch it in the trailer, but Vanessa Hudgens is in the movie?
Yes.
Swoon.
Yeah, she's one of the young guys.
She's one of the. Vanessa Hudgens is like 35 already, right?
Hey.
No, I'm just saying why are you pushing
the Vanessa Hudgens.
She's trying to do like when I was watching it, I was like, oh, it's a playoff like a 21 Jump Street kind
yes,
of.
Yes, that's exactly the vibe I was getting.
Yeah,
yes.
So that was that joke, and
I was kind of getting the Expendables 3 vibe where one of them is gonna get there's only gonna be one person they have to send in like the new
recruits.
Then the new blood's get in trouble, so that they have to send in
yeah,
the old
and Martin Lawrence will come in.
Oh, that's true.
And Terry Crews gets shot.
But it's still it's kind of
Will's shirt is unbuttoned for some reason. It just flows.
I'm still from what I get from the trailer though is Mike Lowry's still single apparently.
That's yeah, three movies later. I know you're right. I actually what's the lady's name from the first movie? I can't remember now. But she's pretty
Tia,
not Tia.
Something Leone.
Tia Leone.
There you go.
Yeah. You got the first one, right?
Yeah.
And the second one, right?
So just combine it.
Combine it.
Natasha.
So, kind of going off of what Lewis was talking about, is that it does seem like Will Smith is going to need a W somewhere sometime soon. Now, Harold, I know for a fact that you watched Aladdin and you didn't really care for it.
But that's a win.
In terms of financially, I thought it was a win. You're right.
Yeah.
But I think you were one with a lot of fans who didn't really think that was a good performance by Will Smith.
It's like we talked about, the success of that movie wasn't based on Will Smith or his performance.
Mm.
It was always going to be based on the Aladdin and Disney name.
Right.
So his weight to... I'm not saying that you could have just thrown anyone in there and made the genie part successful, but his name was never like the marquee name. You know what I mean? It was Aladdin was the sell. It wasn't Will Smith as the genie in Aladdin. So I get that where you say, yeah, himself like trying to carry a movie by himself. Yeah, that Will Smith needs a win.
Well, and the reason why we're talking about it is, of course, we just had a recent release of Will Smith's newest movie called Gemini Man. And it seemed like it was a good idea. I mean, was it Ang Lee? Or
yeah, on paper, it looked pretty solid.
Ang
Lee. If you're into film auteur, it's Ang Lee. Excuse the French accent. But yeah, it's Ang Lee.
I thought that word was French.
Ang?
But yeah, so it's on paper, it looked like a solid deal. I mean, it's Ang Lee, You know,
you get two Will Smiths for a price of one. This was my dream movie.
This is Dennis's dream threesome.
Ang Lee directing it.
Ang Lee directing two Will Smiths pointing guns at each other.
And then I found out there was no kissing scene between the two Will Smiths, and I was like, I'm out.
And you're their core demographic. Like, if they couldn't get you to watch the movie, then no one was going to watch it.
And I think that was the issue, is that, and hell, we did a full freaking episode of Will Smith. And I've extolled the virtue of Will Smith.
Of William.
And, Willis Smith. And, you know, if as Harold said, if I honestly did not have any interest in watching it.
Yeah.
Because it just... there was nothing that caught my eye aside from Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and turns out that Will Smith is not enough of a draw for me to say, hey, because I learned from my mistake with Wild Wild West.
20 years later, Dennis was about to buy the ticket and he was like, Wild Wild West? Oh, no. You're not going to get me twice in 20 years.
I was about to give my card and I heard, wicka wicka.
whoa. Cisco was like, whoa, wait a second. It's like PTSD flashback. Oh, God. Yeah, it's weird to me, too, because, like, you know, he seems to be a box office draw that demands, like, this high salary to show up in these movies, yet, like, I don't know what it is. Like, maybe it's... I read it somewhere. I'm cribbing somebody's notes here, but, you know, I was reading somewhere where Will is actually at his best when he's in a duo or when he's playing off of somebody else. I mean, even his rom-coms like Hitch, you know, that's the most important, that's his biggest one, and he's playing off of you know, Mall Cop.
I want you to say his name.
I can't remember his name. Kevin something.
Say his name.
Kevin something. God, I'm having a brain fart right now. Anyway, but so yeah,
it's James, damn it. It's Kevin James. Sorry.
There's two first names.
It's hard to use. So, I mean, it's crazy to me that this movie bombed as much as it did, because, I mean, Harold's our walking IMDb over here, so I think it was made for, like, $20 million, and it only...
It seems like one of those movies that probably should have done the straight-to-streaming.
Oh, you think so? Right. Okay. Like, because
like, The Irishman just did that, where it's like they did a limited theater opening... And this is, we're talking about a movie made by Martin Scorsese starring Al Pacino, Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, we're going to open it in like a couple of theaters and then we're going to stream it on Netflix.
Yeah. And that one has some CGI too about the aging those guys too.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't. I
thought that's why you brought it up, because that's the parallel of like young Will Smith and young Pacino.
I thought that was a pretty.
Oh, you know, it's pretty good doing this thing blind. I mean, it's kind of the same way where. I love the Godfather movies, and I would really appreciate to watch something, you know, like a continuation of that series. For me, right now, it's just not appealing to watch a 3.5-hour movie about mobsters right now.
Yeah.
Or just right now, you know. Maybe one of these days when I'm feeling like, you know, life is really, really down, and I'd be like, okay, let's make it worse.
Yeah.
But for now, I mean, even at that moment...
My life is not bad yet.
Yeah, now let's watch this thing. And... At the same time, it's like that, if I had the option of watching either that or Gemini Man, you know, at any given time, I'd probably lean towards that.
Oh.
Like, even though it might be double the time, and, you know, half the acting skills, apparently, because of two Will Smiths are equivalent to two...
To how many to Pesci, four, how many Pescis is that?
Four, according to your
two and a half Pescis. Which is 5 stone.
Because he's little.
He's a small guy.
But, like, it's... at any point, even the marketing, it just seemed a little off. Where it's like, who is this movie directed towards?
Oh, yeah, okay.
And,
yeah.
You know, is it a rated R action movie? Is it a PG-13 action movie? Is it a sci-fi movie?
Yeah.
Even, you know, movies like Looper and, like, Jumper, those had hard-to-sell premises.
Mm-hmm.
But
you knew what it was about.
Yeah.
Just based on the trailer. The only thing, this one, the only attraction was, you get a younger Will Smith.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You get Fresh Prince of Will Smith.
But you don't really get... Dude, if old... Hear me out. If old Will Smith went and time traveled to kill the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
That's the movie. That's the movie I'd watch.
I'd watch Looper 2.
Even loopier.
Oh man! So, you know, first bomb that we're talking about. What's the second bomb that we want?
It's the unfortunate bomb.
Yeah, unfortunately. So this is a movie we got the pleasure of seeing by surprise. Is Terminator Dark Fate. So it's been out for about a week and a half now, and it's not tracking so hot. Unfortunately, this is a movie that, I mean, the three of us enjoyed it. I mean, it is one of those movies where you enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. Personally, when I walked away, you start digging at the little holes and whatnot, but it still doesn't take away from the enjoyment. So I'm not sure why it's not doing so well. I mean, they brought back, hypothetically, the stars that, you know, that made this franchise. I mean, you get
Linda
Arnold,
Hamilton.
You got Linda Hamilton back.
You even have the input by James Cameron.
Right.
Yeah, he's producing. Directing,
and you got a new hot director in Tim Miller, who did the Deadpool series. Yeah. And so you thought, again, just like Gemini Man, on paper, it looks like a winning formula, yet, you know, people are not going into the theaters to see it.
Well, since we all watched it, then let's kind of dive into that.
Spoilers.
Why do you think, spoiler alert, just in case, why do you think that it failed miserably, at least it looks like it's failing miserably?
My biggest thing is Arnold not being the star. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
When you think Terminator, that's why I think Salvation was failed. Harder than any of the other ones, even though it was an okay movie, was they tried to pretend that he was not even part of the thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then they gave that, you know, Scorpion King version of Arnold Schwarzenegger at the very end of the movie. Terminator 1 works because Arnold was one of the scariest villains of all time.
Yeah, it was a draw, yeah.
Terminator 2 works because he's one of the best heroes of all time, which mm-hmm. is still... AFI did this great, like, 150 villains and 50... heroes list.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And the Terminator is the only character to be on both heroes and villains,
right,
because
yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger was able to embody a villain and a hero in the same character, albeit for different movies. And then we have Terminator 3, and then that's kind of when the shine was off the franchise already. And I was thinking about it, it's not franchise fatigue like Star Wars, because it hasn't been consistently for the past couple of years. It's been, like, you know, what, 3 or 4 years since the last one came out, and it wasn't that great. But you still had Arnold in it, and he played a semi-back role. Literally, in this movie, and we've seen it, he is a supporting character that only comes in at the very end of the
Second
movie.
Second half of the movie, yeah.
Yeah, and even when he is comes into the movie, he's never put into the main, he's never the main actor. And that's kind of the problem with... I think that they've had the transition with some of the Star Wars movies is you have the old characters, but we're pushing these new characters. And you're pushing them really hard in this movie to be the replacement for a franchise that people really loved. And it's like, you know, when you think the Terminator franchise, you obviously think Sarah Connor, John Connor, and any of the T-800s that are coming out. And having two of those characters back was a great benefit, obviously. Like, we enjoyed the movie. But in the back of my head, even when I'm watching these commercials that are coming out, they have barely Arnold in it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's like, why even, you know, commercialize or market that he's in the movie if he's going to be such a small part of it anyways? I get it. He is a big sell as well. But more or less, like, he's not essential, almost inessential for the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, what part of it do you think is what you're saying? It's Arnold Schwarzenegger, but it's interesting that you use Star Wars as a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of especially the initial flack from Force Awakens wasn't necessarily that it was because they weren't pushing the old characters. It was really more of the fact that it was Rey, that it was a female-driven character.
That's another
character
as well.
So, considering that, even though I honestly didn't know that the new Sarah Connor or the new John Connor was the girl, I forgot her name.
Danny.
I didn't even know, based on the commercials, I didn't even know that that character existed.
Exactly.
You know, and so the only focus really was Linda Hamilton, the new Terminator. And, you know, a joke about Arnold Schwarzenegger. So what part of it is the fact that it's not Arnold Schwarzenegger? And what part of it do you think is the fanboy, you know, craze these days where if you replace something that you love with something that is more feminine, that, you know, a lot of the fanboys are not actually the whole fandom toxicity, you know, what role does this play?
You know, I hate to say it, that's probably, unfortunately, a significant part of of how that began to be. You're right. Because I'm trying to think in my head now. I mean, the thing is that a lot of these franchise reboots or these soft reboots are happening. I mean, we had it with Star Wars, like we mentioned. Rocky technically already had it with Creed.
I was going to say there was a female Rocky. I was like,
I would watch
that. I'd watch the hell out of that movie.
It's called Million Dollar Baby. Didn't work out so well for her.
No.
She dies. But did she get $1 million?
No, but she had a broken neck. Sorry. 15-year-old spoilers, sorry. Anyone who hasn't seen $1 Million Baby.
So, yeah, unfortunately, you know, part of me does feel like, you know, I'm kind of a new resident to the whole Twitter universe. Harold's the more experienced one, but you know, you take a look into there. I know it's just a small sample size of fandom in general, but yeah, there's a lot of like just snidey back talk about like, oh, this Danny's supposed to be a new hero. Again, spoiler, you kill off John Connor in the first 5 minutes. You know, this is the whole franchise about John Connor.
Like, which, a punk, dude.
Yeah. He did kind of go out like a punk. Not going to lie.
He's like, so shaved ice and he's like,
how you going to go out while you're like flirting with a young black guy?
How you going to go out holding a coconut in one hand?
So, I mean, yeah, unfortunately, I guess it doesn't have... Like, I guess the movie itself didn't have any legs. I'm trying to go back again to what you're talking about, Gemini Man. With a lot of movies nowadays, unfortunately, not to sound all Scorsese, but, you know, if it's not a Marvel movie with a billion-dollar company backing it in the theaters, you have to have positive word of mouth to get people into the theaters again or to see, you know, to see these movies. So, you know, unfortunately, Gemini Man did not have that positive, like, you gotta see it, you gotta see it. You know, this one, again, unfortunately, yeah, for every one good comment about the action or the fact that Linda Hamilton is great, you get, you know, two or three other fanboys saying, oh, screw this, they killed John Connor, and you know, I'm not going to watch it, or nobody should go see it. It's like, I was like, oh, that's too bad. But, I mean, it was an admirable movie. I do like, I mean, maybe, I know Harold said that this isn't franchise fatigue because, you know, they haven't had a lot of Terminator movies in the last year, a couple of years since the, you know, that one misstep that they made with those guys. I can't remember the name of the movie. Genesis.
I was going to put Genesis real quick.
Yeah. But maybe it's the fact that the Terminator franchise itself doesn't have the hooks that it has with the people nowadays. You know, like, I'm trying to think of, like, other 80s classics that kind of faltered in the last few years, too. Like, we had an Aliens movie and a Predator movie in the last few years that haven't exactly set the world on fire. So maybe... Unfortunately, I have to say it, but I think these beloved 80s franchises of ours are just not going to, don't have legs, you know? Like, they have a special part in our hearts, but not, you know, not for this next generation.
Now, what was the reason behind this? Is it that it's better than, the fact is that it's not as good as we think it was? Or is it just the way people are now? I mean, you know, considering that this is still... The Terminator is still a story about, you know, post-apocalyptic, you know, scenarios and everything. Right. You think that this is still something that is really important, really relevant to everybody.
I know, that's true. I think it's just gotta hit the right chord with audiences to really take off. I think the earlier movies, like the way that Harold described how Terminator 1 and 2 really hit a chord in the right time is just... It's different. Like, you can't catch lightning in a bottle like that. I mean, Cameron just hit him out of the park when the first two movies came out, and you know, they've had four tries since then, and it just doesn't seem, none of them seem to hit the hit. So I don't know.
I think the ironic thing is going to be how
the iron,
the pumping iron,
yes, will be that when Avatar 2 comes out, if Avatar 2 bombs, which I'm pretty sure it won't, but if it doesn't make,
you don't think so?
I think it's going to do. Not like gangbusters, like the biggest movie of all time, like the first one was, because that's impossible, or it shouldn't be possible. But I think that at least for that franchise itself, it's been such a long time that people who like love the original one, they're no longer enamored with it or waiting for it, and now it's just like, okay, just get the movie over with already, you know. Yeah. So if that bombs, who do they blame on that one? It's kind of the, you know, it's the whole, like you say, the Marvel thing. Like, the machine behind the Marvel movies was built so well.
Yeah, yeah.
After the first ones. Because, like, you know, initially, they were big movies, but they weren't the biggest movies of all time. Like, $100 million, pretty good. Now you got, like, $500 million in the first weekend kind of deal. Yeah,
you're looking at, if it doesn't make $1 billion after a month, it's, then it's a fail. Even doing? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Unless you're Ant-Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you're going to be like, Paul Rudd. It's okay.
It's a cute movie.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, unless I was, I reread that around, Ant-Man 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it's a good one.
2023? Yeah. It's far off.
Like that, but I wonder still, if that's going to be phase 4. I don't know. I've lost count of phase, what phase we're in now.
Okay. So I guess going to our main topic for our day today, and hopefully it's not a sign of what we think, but we're talking about movie bombs and everything.
Uh-huh.
And just yesterday, it was yesterday, right? Or yeah. 2 days ago. What is today? Well, a couple of days ago. wow. Spoiled the timeline here. But just recently...
There you go.
Just recently...
that's how you fix it.
I was just going to say Star Wars Live, by the way.
I watched the hell out of that.
I have the Simpsons that Luke be a Jedi tonight.
Oh, my ankle.
Sorry. Go ahead. No, so just recently we had... the newest Disney Live presentation. What are we even calling it?
It's kind of like the first. It seems like the first time that they've really done something like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was an interesting project.
Yeah, so it was Little Mermaid, beloved film, one of the classics that we have, and it just so happened it is the 30th anniversary of that movie, which just shows that I'm old officially now.
Yeah, you're old.
I know. You guys are still youngins.
Nope.
But, well, relatively.
Yeah, you're showing it to your daughter, like, back in my day.
Back in my day.
This was, let me get this laser disc.
This was a VHS.
let me get my film reel.
Yeah,
out.
So The Little Mermaid 30th anniversary, and the bigwigs in Disney decided they were going to do something special, and they touted it as a must-see TV event where it's going to be a hybrid of animation and live action. So, to be honest with you, it was something I was looking forward to. I know we talked about it, and we had made plans to make sure that we were trying to figure out if we can, you know, watch it together. But Lewis is like Sleeping Beauty. If it passes like 9 o'clock, he's tired already. So.
I have to go before I turn into a carrot, exactly. Or whatever, whatever it is that the rats turned into. Man, whatever. I didn't watch these. All right, please move on.
Is it a carrot?
Pumpkin. We're gonna have this silence. We're going to extend this out.
Aren't we so glad that Lewis gets Disney Plus for free?
I'm so excited. Thank you, Verizon.
Because you finally get to, you know...
Wait, Verizon does Disney Plus for free?
Yeah, absolutely.
I did not know that.
Yabba Dabba Doo is not part of it. That's Hanna-Barbera, bro.
Yes. Tangent, I just found out today, thanks to my Verizon bill, I was paying my bill online, it's like, customers get Disney Plus. We're like, what?
Damn it.
Yeah, dude, but you have to have the unlimited data plan. Or their cable, but I have the unlimited data plan, so I get...
Doesn't everybody have an unlimited data plan?
Sometimes people are...
No, Richie Rich, not everybody does.
Oh, really?
Some people have...
Why even have the internet, bro?
That's true.
Actually, you know what? To be honest, since I pay for all the cell phones in my family... my dad does not have an unlimited data plan.
Well, that's because you're a jerk.
Because he doesn't know how to use data, bro. What's the point?
I'm not talking about myself.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Even your daughter has unlimited data.
What's the point? Yeah, but I love my daughter.
I mean, I'm fond of my father. But he's never going to use the internet.
This has devolved into something that we were planning.
Into therapy.
Disney Plus, damn it! It has just gotten destroyed. So, Beauty and the Beast Live.
Ooh.
That's already a...
That's gotta be next.
That's gotta be...
Well, 2 years. You know, that's gotta be planning. 2 more years, because 91 was... It'll be the 30th first. And
they have to do something. But before we get to Beauty and the Beast Live, we gotta talk about Sound of Music. Little Mermaid, the Little Mermaid line, and I guess that's not. I guess, but that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
Thoughts. I know Lewis was actually able to watch most of it because Lewis doesn't care about preparation.
My DVR cut out the first 15 minutes of it.
Did it really?
My bad, you did.
No, wait, the only thing you said you missed was Mercedes.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah, Mercedes. Mercedes from Glee apparently had a nice little number.
Yeah, it was terrible. Well, okay, let's go overall.
Okay.
What did you guys think? And then later on we can kind of go maybe song by song, try to figure out what worked and what didn't. Let's go with general impressions first, then.
It was interesting because it was a different take. It was not what I was expecting up until I saw some of the commercials where they were going to intercut the live performances along with the animation, which was I thought was a really good idea. And some of the performances were really good, like musical and number wise. The dancers were great. The vocalists were there. we can talk about that. We're definitely gonna talk about that. But at the same time, keeping the spirit of the movie alive, like you know, keeping the important parts of the movie going, so you're more immersed into what the musical numbers are about to go into. So in that sense, it was very entertaining, like super entertaining. Like I would definitely watch it again. Just because it's like watching an old movie, but then watching it's like with live commentary or like a live performance.
For me, I was actually taken by surprise because unlike you guys, I actually did not see any of the ads. The only way I found out about it was through our chat, and you guys brought it up. So I actually did not know that they were going to intercut the animated, or you know, it was going to be the animated movie with cuts into the live stage show. Because you know, the last few years we've talked about it already in our musical episode, but you know, they've been doing these live musicals on TV, like Rent and Sound of Music and whatnot. And so I was expecting it to be a full-on production, like a stage show. But in retrospect, yeah, I guess it makes sense that they did do a little, you know, that this little half and half thing, because trying to set a stage of, you know, trying to imagine it being under the water, I can imagine the production value of the stage show would.
You mean under the sea?
I know. I didn't want to say it. That's why I said I had to pause. And yeah,
but go with it, man.
No, go with it. So yeah, I see how they did it. So I was actually taken by surprise by that. I was okay with it. I wasn't actually as impressed as I would have liked. I think unfortunately I've been spoiled by, you know, I had a wonderful date with Dennis years ago to see The Lion King live. So I was expecting something like that. Out of this, so you know, I was okay with it. It's not the greatest live, quote unquote. I don't know what you call this genre of live musical on TV, but not my favorite one. I think.
I think it's the first one. This is the first, and it's unique in that sense. And kind of like Harold, I wasn't expecting what I saw, and part of me is torn because, like Harold, I enjoyed myself, but for me. I don't know, I think it kind of lessened the movie experience for me. Because I actually enjoyed, for the most part, the live performances. I realized that without the musical numbers, that movie was not really as good as it was. Like, the thing that made that movie entertaining is the music.
Right, you know? Yeah.
And the background, the storyline was weak. And it was so jarring to realize.
Yeah, you're right. Like, I think you're right.
Oh crap!
It's flat. It's okay. A flat story.
So we talk about our Disney fandom, and I've seen the Little Mermaid a couple dozen times, and yesterday was one of those times where I just realized that they're forcing Prince Eric into marriage. He's probably like 18 or 19 years old, because if he's not. He's trying to date Ariel, who's 16 years old, because she says, I'm 16 years old, and I'm like, whoa, doggy, like, why are you trying to get into marriage right away? And I was like, I'm literally twice their age. I don't got that pressure yet. Maybe because I'm not the, you know...
You're not the prince.
The youngest daughter. Also, the thing that made me, and it's kind of mean, but when they had that Amber Riley performance, or as Mercedes, as you call her, and she was...
She has a real name.
She has a real name. But they were introducing all the daughters and stuff, and then I was like, they had to go that route where it had to be multicultural daughters.
And not just multicultural.
And then, like, multi-sized daughters.
Oh.
So this would
be inclusive.
It was inclusive. We were like,
But at the same time, you know what that means? King Triton B. That wasn't a trident, guys.
Oh, man, dude. I didn't even think about it that way. But, you know, going back to my point, I think that... Now, aside from it making the movie a little bit weaker, I think what they did was pretty interesting because, I don't know, would it have worked if Auli'i or Latifah or them actually...
Latifah?
Yeah.
He didn't vote for her. She's not his.
No, she's born she's into it, bro.
I'm in a Democratic country. I don't recognize queens or kings. Okay. No, but...
Mrs. Latifah.
Part of me was kind of thinking, would it have been better if they actually did a live action?
Yeah, yeah.
Because...
True.
I thought that... I guess we're gonna, let's go from here. I thought the performances were actually pretty good. Was it perfect? I don't think so. But I think the character, the people that they chose were good enough that it actually hurt their performance that they couldn't perform.
They weren't the characters. That's the weirdest thing to me still. Is it, like you said, it's kind of a little bit jarring where it's like they could have done at least some of the lines and everything, yeah. But they're literally just there just to sing.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
So let's start. I don't know. Maybe let's start with the songs. Each of the songs. What did we think? You don't have to check. You know which songs are which.
Oh no, I don't remember the name of the first song.
Oh, Daughters of Triton.
Is that what?
No, we're Fathoms Below.
Okay, I just can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, Fathoms Below was the first one.
The guy who played Prince Eric has a fantastic voice.
He does.
Mm-hmm. And I was, the whole time, I was like, I have no idea who this kid is. I've been looking up his things. I was like, I've seen Blockers, but I don't remember him in that movie.
I actually saw Ben 10. So
the movie?
The live action, like...
There's a Ben 10 live action. Yeah. I see. I knew it. I didn't know he was that guy. But he was fantastic.
He was. And, no, I was telling Lewis. Lewis was asking what it was. I think it's one of the Jonas Brothers.
Well, close enough.
My other son was like, Shawn Mendes? I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's not.
I think Shawn Mendes would have done a great job, too. But
that performance, I thought was pretty good. At least for me, Lewis can't really attest to it. I thought it was pretty good. The costumes, the sequences, the sequence was great. My favorite sequence, which I wish they kind of did a little bit more, was that in the end, the guy that plays the minister or something like that, the envoy for Prince Eric.
Oh yeah, yeah,
he's playing with his fish. He's playing with his fish, and then he accidentally throws it out, and all of a sudden it goes straight into the movie.
I thought that was fantastic, and I thought that exactly was how the rest of the show was going to go.
Exactly.
If it had gone like that, much better, because the transitions would have worked a lot better.
Mm-hmm. It was clean.
It's okay, perfect.
So much so that I had to like stop and rewind. Yeah. I was like, oh my god, that was great. But that was the last time they did.
Oh, yeah. Everything else was like set up for. Yeah.
Right. It was like a PCN. It's like musical numbers done. Okay,
curtains open. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. But yeah. Like that transition was gorgeous and done very well. And then they went into the Daughters of Triton song with Amber Riley.
Which, she sounded good, but I was really missing... Well, it was... Okay, fine. I'll give you that. Harold just gave
me... No. I was going to...
Harold just gave me
no,
the same guy.
I
thought she sounded good, but I didn't like the fact that... The beauty for me was always that each Daughter of Triton actually did... her own thing. I was waiting for the plus size daughter
trying
to sing her own everything, like trying to imagine what her voice would be like. But it was
just kidding.
It was Amber Riley singing for them.
Yeah,
and they only got to do their one ha 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 like a couple of times, and it was kind of a little disappointing. And actually, I'm kind of the opposite. I kind of don't like Amber Riley's voice.
Really?
I didn't like her in Glee. I there's something about her that, I don't know. It was, she's good. It's like one of those, yeah, she's good. Eh. She's okay. But her voice, I guess it fit well for that, but I'm with Dennis. And then that was kind of, I was really expecting each individual daughter to sing their own parts.
Yeah. It would have been a lot better. And maybe they just wanted a big name, although yeah. Is Amber Riley really a big name?
No, she's not a sell anymore. You know, yeah. So, I mean,
at least there's some recognition. I mean,
yeah. But like you said, you were literally like, oh, the girl from Mercedes from Glee.
Yeah.
So that's how big of a name she is.
I was talking there, I turned to my wife, is that the girl from Glee?
See? not a selling point. You know?
And for some reason, they were highlighting her the whole time. So, first one, and I'd give that, at least for me, I'd give it like a B minus. Maybe even less than that, but I'll be generous here.
And then you want to go into what's next?
Okay, next is
the big song.
Big song.
The one, like we discussed before, probably, I think, might be my favorite Disney song of all time.
Really? I don't think you ever
that told me. And A Whole New World are kind of like
neck to neck.
One A and one B.
Mm. Oh, okay.
That's sorry. Just me, because you know.
Sorry. Mrs. Potts is still.
Oh, Jesus singing. Christ!
Mrs. Potts singing Beauty and the Beast is still always going to be number one. So, so it's
Lily chime in now, because oh, yeah, you saw that.
Right? I did see.
Okay, so, yeah, what's her name again?
Shut up. I'm looking up her name right now.
Huh? How do you pronounce it?
Ali Cavallo or something?
I didn't know. Ali. I didn't know where the accent goes.
Ali Cavallo.
So, yes. Lewis.
So, this is the young woman who plays Moana in the movie. I thought she did an admirable job. This was the first song
have
that
we
I jumped
said
into.
What the song is yet?
Oh, part of my world. Part of the world? Shit. Shoot. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Lewis is going to name every single song.
I know. Wait, what was the name of the first song?
You're one article off, Brooklyn. You almost got it.
Part of your world.
Of your
world. Of your
world. You emphasize of. Oh.
No wonder you can say Ali.
I don't know what to emphasize.
Ali.
I don't know what part to emphasize.
Wrong emphasis.
So Part of Your World was actually really well made. Well done. I thought it was... Like I mentioned, my DVR cut out the first few minutes. I really didn't know what I was getting into. The screen went from the animated part into the stage production where Oli is being flown, you know, from the
you
stage.
You have to nod your head when you say
yes,
it.
Yes, I do. I wish we were a video.
Sometimes.
Sounds like a radio guy.
Sometimes.
Like Ralph Garman right now.
Look like you're doing a roller coaster.
Oli!
So you know she's swooping in from stage right, and the song starts. I feel like she has a wonderful voice. I thought she was a great cast. I thought she was a, if anybody, this, you know, she was a great pickup for this song, for this production, and I thought she did the song justice. You know, I do have to echo what some of after we saw it on my DVR, I went online for a little bit. I guess I do have to also call out the fact that Flounder did look a little weird, but you know, otherwise everything else felt very much in place. So you know, kudos to this production. I do like how they did the stage where it's basically a stage and a runway kind of part, where you know she was able to maneuver from the front of the stage or closer to the audience and back and forth. So it really added a different dimension to the song. So I liked it. I personally like that song a lot. How they do that song, sorry.
Yeah, I liked it, and I think we'll just do it where Harold gets the final say.
Okay.
The karaoke.
Such a jerk over here.
I thought there was a certain parts of it, especially the beginning, where she was a little, I don't know if the word's pitchy.
Okay.
But definitely there were some parts of it, but most of the time... I really did enjoy her voice. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the performance. I think the one drawback was that because they were so intent on doing the whole floating and flying, it seemed it, she became a little bit stiffer than
yeah. You know, yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because I do feel bad for her that she has to, like, act or do her performance with mm-hmm. her leg bound together. Yeah. That cannot be easy.
And not just bound together, but bent and in the Little Mermaid, like...
Yeah, into the aerial position where she's, like, leaning on a rock, where she's doing this, and poor girl is just like, eh. Speaking of Terminators, like, robots, like, oh, God. Yeah,
but I quite enjoyed that version of Part of Your World. I don't think she is. I mean, just based on Moana, she wasn't really a classically trained.
She's just a singer.
She's just somebody that knows how, that, and most likely she practiced this over and over and over again. The one thing, and I know this sounds really picky of me, but she did. It seemed like they were trying to copy Jodie Benson, I believe Jodie Benson's voice. But the I don't know, they were, she was clipping some of the,
that's some, my biggest, some of the, my the, biggest
the,
problem.
Instead of like extending some of the phrases, the words, it seemed like she kind of cut it off.
Yeah.
And it was jarring to me.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out what clipping means. I'm sorry, I'm not classically trained like you two.
No, we're trained on the street. I'm like, clipping it. You know what? I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Okay.
Because, like I said, I love the song. And I love when people give their versions of songs. Mm. What I thought was fantastic was having the shadows of the dancers in the front, in the foreground, without showing faces or anything. So it was just shadows. Like, when she's singing the words, I want to be with the people, or I want to see, them dancing, and they're dancing in front, you know, a little too on the nose for that. But visually, beautiful. Her flying across the, or, you know, doing the aerials. Nailed it. That I thought was probably, like, if you've ever seen Pink perform, she does a lot of aerials in her shows, and you have to give her, you know, big credit, because she's flying through the air. The thing is restricting her lungs and her breathing capacity, but she's able to hold the notes. That's because she practices that all the time. And, as much as I love Ali's voice, it's still not, like Dennis said, she's not a strong singer, but she's a good singer. You know what I mean? And you can do anything with that song. You cut small notes here and there, you know, be pitchy, like Dennis said. But for me, if you don't hold that one note right before the very last line, then there's no point in doing that song.
Yeah.
Because that, for me, I was like, watching it, and I was like, and then that, and you're like, above, and you're like, wait, what just happened to the rest of above? I was like, above lasts for like 15 seconds, dude.
Did the audio cut out?
And then, but I get it, because she's like, up above, and she's like flying in the air.
her breath got caught.
Yeah, she's like, sure, up above.
The harness is like,
So,
and again, if you watch it, she's like contorted in like this.
Yeah.
And so you know for a fact that it's not just a harness, she has to hold that position.
Yeah.
And so, like, even a professional singer would have a hard time.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, that, and being that is the very first song, her very first performance.
Right, yeah.
Like, this is the opening, and this is like who you're introduced to as her, as the character of Ariel, instead of you know, the regular part of the film where you have those parts. But this is where you see her shine first as Ariel, and you're like me, you're expecting the song to be the greatest, and then it comes out pretty good.
Yeah.
But you know, like
you,
we said,
like, you can't compare it to the original Ariel. Jodie Benson's version of it is still going to be the best.
It's like, no matter what anyone else does, and no matter whose voice covers that song, it will never be. And this is like, it's a testament to Jodie Benson, and it's like just a testament to how that song was tailor made for her.
Yeah, I remember there was an anniversary thing for Disney, and somebody actually did a performance of Part of Your World.
Jessica Simpson?
Was it Jessica Simpson?
She has a version.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, it was terrible.
Well, because that's Jessica Simpson.
Yeah, I know. But so I would actually give Ali's version of it a B+, A- for me.
That's like a B. It's a solid B. It's passing.
It's passing. Okay.
But in my house, it's not acceptable.
So again, this is a harsh, critic. You know? I'm the nice uncle that's like, "Oh, good job."
No,
good
dude. Job. I mean,
an effort was made.
Okay, so eventually, we're gonna be watching some of your children do performances. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be the same person that goes to BTNs and criticizes those shows, as well as watches my niece's musicals and criticizes the hell out of those things. And hopefully she's not listening, but sometimes she does. But, like, at her performances, I will always be like, that was terrible. I don't know how you did 6 months of practice just for that to be the performance that you showed to people.
Wow.
Which hopefully... I don't have to do, because, you know.
Yeah,
I
mean, I'm going to warn my son. Thanks.
Yeah. No, no, heads up, man. Because he, you know.
Hey, Hakuna Matata.
Exactly. You can't say that word.
Turns out he can.
He will.
He gets a chance.
Okay, so next song up, I believe, is the reprise. How do you pronounce that?
The reprise.
One? Reprise of Part of Your World.
Yeah.
That one I thought wasn't as good as the first one. I don't know why, it just didn't sound good.
It was just me. I think that, see, this is where I think the problem with the musical or the with the show was, is that's such a small part of the thing of the movie world. Itself that there was no real point in doing that part, because it's literally like a minute song.
They could have cut it.
And the best part of that thing is, of course, when Ariel splashes out of the water. That sounds funny. But it's not as visually appealing when, you know, it's her and confetti's getting shot at you. So,
that's what I was waiting for, too.
Some kind of my weird pseudonym. Yeah. But see, when you have that, though, so you have her singing that line, that particular song, but there's no Ursula redoing her song when she's getting her hair fixed. At the very end of the thing.
Yeah, didn't cut to that, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay. I mean, that's
so, next, Lewis, yes, no?
Yeah, next song would be Under the Sea. Personally, my favorite part of the whole freaking shebang, because we get Shaggy as...
Shaggy!
As Sebastian the freaking lobster.
Did he have to do an accent, by the way?
I don't know.
No, he just stayed regular Shaggy.
I think that was my favorite part about, like, I was telling Dennis when he finally came out, I was like, oh, so poor Oli has to have, like, her legs bound for, like, the whole show. And Shaggy
has to have the tail.
Yeah. And Shaggy just got out of his limo. Like,
no, you know what, though?
Best Eddie Murphy.
What you guys forgot is Shaggy was too busy defending Emperor Snoke. That's right.
He was the one Imperial Guard that survived.
He's the one that didn't get shanked in the face.
I really thought he was out of breath because he just performed Thriller. So
see,
the jokes keep coming, man.
And then he burst out of the wall and said, "Oh yeah."
At least give him like lobster claw heads.
Okay. They didn't even like.
No. So I don't know if you guys saw. For those people who don't know what we're talking about, Shaggy comes out and he's basically wearing a red leather jumpsuit.
Yeah.
That Lewis said looked straight out of Eddie Murphy's
Delirious. You know, or Michael Jackson's Thriller.
So, you know, and it was such a huge thing on Twitter that they were talking about, well, you know, Shaggy couldn't like be bothered to look like a crab, you know, or something like that. And the one of the Disney bosses were so angry at the comments that they actually showed a picture of Shaggy. No, it was the same outfit, and they had these crappy claws.
Oh,
like he actually had a picture of him in claws, and the guy goes, "We had some." The caption was like, "We had Shaggy with claws during rehearsals, and we thought they were ridiculous."
Now we need to find this picture.
I don't know. I need to find that.
You know, okay. Besides the fact that what he wore was hilarious, the other thing I thought of was. You guys ever see Dracula with Gary Oldman?
Yes, no. The Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, yeah, with Keanu Reeves doing an English British accent. But before Dracula becomes Dracula, he had this one full red bodysuit where he was murdering everybody. And I was like, is Shaggy going to start shanking people?
The Shaggy at the Shankville?
This is a, the first thing that came up was, like, the Imperial Guards that were, you know, protecting Snoke. And then the Red Guard. And then I was just, it just kept on going, getting worse and worse. But
interestingly enough, look over. We have the Star Wars Last Jedi. Turns out Shaggy was in Star Wars Last Jedi.
That's some good Disney synergy, right? There you go. So I mean, but besides that, the weird start to that performance, I actually thought it was fine. It was one of the. I mean, so this is the first. Again, I didn't see the first performance, unfortunately. But you know, for this one where they had so many other. Dancers and choreography in it. I thought it was pretty well made, pretty well done. Shaggy is one of those, like, so when Auli'i was singing, you can kind of lose yourself in thinking, okay, this is Ariel in her place. This one is like, oh, it's Shaggy singing.
Yeah,
under the sea.
I agree.
I think unfortunately he's one of those voices where it's like it's so embedded into your head, like this is Mr. Lova Lova. So it's like, oh, okay. It's like him at karaoke. So it's like, all right, that's fine. But again, props though for the choreography and like all those wonderful people in their fish outfits trying to do
the
thing.
My thing was, it was like every other character in this show like really tried to personify the character.
Uh-huh.
Shaggy was like, well, I'm wearing this suit.
Yeah.
I'm going to sing like I do, and this is what you're going to get. And it just so happened it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so, his performance was so low key, like there was really no like energy to it.
Yeah,
especially considering it's supposed to be under the sea.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that was
should have been the high energy.
It's a jam.
Yeah,
like so. Two notes I always look for in Under the Sea are the Duke of Soul. Yeah, and then the other one is what's the other one? The other one with it. There's a bass note. Guess who's gonna be on the plate?
Oh,
yeah, see. But I'm actually the opposite of you guys. I really dug him singing those songs.
Okay.
Because I was just like, it's literally Shaggy doing an impersonation of the guy that's doing Sebastian.
He wasn't doing an impersonation,
but he
though,
was
dude.
Because it wasn't.
It was just him.
No, because Shaggy's voice is a lot is different. His singing voice is different for his songs than he is for this one. Because I think he was more able to embody, at least in Under the Sea. In Kiss the Girl, it was literally like Mr. Lover Lover.
It wasn't me. Yeah. I was waiting for that line.
But, I mean, yeah, I'm with Dennis. The performance-wise, not the best because he was literally just walking side to side.
Right, yeah, yeah.
He was pretty much equivalent to Ariel. Who was
he
just
was, he was a crab. Yeah. That's why he was walking side to side.
Damn it. It was right there. As usual, the crabs were right in my face, and I didn't see it.
Oh.
It wasn't me.
All right.
But yeah, for his performance for Under the Sea, if we're grading it, that's like a
C+. Yeah, okay. I agree.
All right. So nope. For the next song after that, we have "Poor Unfortunate Souls" with
dang.
Ursula and Ariel. So yeah, you guys start. What do you guys think?
I thought that was the best performance.
That was hands down the best performance. I did not know Queen Latifah could do that.
Yeah.
I knew she could sing.
I was trying to figure out how she was going to approach
and
it.
And she just smashed it.
And I was like, oh crap, she's doing the burlesque.
Yeah,
like,
she's
doing
Chicago again.
And
yeah.
I was like, oh crap, okay, that's perfect. And like, you know, I'm not a huge Queen Latifah, you know.
Oh, you called her the queen?
I know. Because for this song.
Yeah, she was.
Yes, queen. Yes.
Okay, this is how.
That's enough TikTok for you, sir.
For me, this is the sad thing, is she did such a good job that Melissa McCarthy is going to have a very hard time feeling that.
That's what we were saying.
That's what we were talking about.
Yep.
That what they should just replace whoever it was, and you're right, it is McCarthy. That's how she was supposed to do it.
Yeah.
And of all the characters, she really, like, you know, that was the one thing that I felt that everybody was trying to copy their character. But this was her. There was no, like, you know, no offense to the person that did Ursula,
mm-hmm.
which I still think is one of the best Disney performances.
Yes.
One of my favorite Disney songs is Poor Unfortunate Souls. But she did her own take,
yeah.
but it was still true to the way it was that I stopped at the end of the whole thing, I was like, man, I wish they added more Queen Latifah.
Honestly, I will watch that scene again.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Literally, like, after this is done, I'll probably watch it again. Because it was so good that I was doing the whole live thing with some of my friends. And then they were like, Queen Latifah is performing. And I was like, and it was like on 5 different Instagram stories. I was like, oh my God, that was so good. And I was just like, I was, from her performance in Chicago was great. But that's a movie.
And yeah.
You're able
to
vocally record pre-live. Edited,
yeah, the whole night.
This was her doing this live, dressed just like Ursula, and with the best Ursula costume ever, singing exactly how Ursula should have done it. Like, if you ever... Like, my friends showed me a video of Fat Amy, whatever Fat Amy... Or Rebel Wilson.
Rebel Wilson.
Doing her Ursula when she did the live at the Hollywood Bowl. Oh,
okay.
And it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the best because, you know, Rebel Wilson isn't the best singer, but embodies a character because that's kind of who Ursula kind of looks similar to. But Queen Latifah, losing as much weight as she did and looking how she did, performing how she did, I was like, there's no one else that could have done that performance live better than Queen Latifah.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, you guys have said everything that needs to be said. That song was great. Latifah was a great catch cast. I mean,
Queen.
Yes,
Queen.
She's not Queen Latifah anymore, guys. She's Yas Queen Latifah.
Oh Lord. All right, so after that we have...
Who cares?
Yeah.
Well, that's it. Are we going to just stop watching it after that?
I guess we have to talk... Do we have to talk about John Stamos?
We have to talk about John Stamos. How dare you?
So we have Le Poisson by John Stamos, who plays the French chef. What do you guys think?
Do you know the chef's name?
I do not know. I hate this game.
His last name is Horn.
So, for me personally, it's kind of like, okay, for this one, it almost feels like a 180 from Shaggy's performance, where I don't know what John Stamos' background is in singing or whatever his.
He sang with the Beach Boys, remember?
Yeah. Dude. He sang to Lori Loughlin.
He sang to Becky Lynch.
She has a
whatever you do, don't pay for your kids' college. Sorry. We got topical for a second.
That's actually one of the verses.
Take that check back.
It's in French, though.
In French, it means
roughly translated. But you know, he hammed it up in this role because I mean, I think he probably felt like he had to do it because he has only the one song to go all in. He went all in, and he just, you know, say what you will about his range or how fun it is to play with a fake French accent, but dude went all in on his role, and it was fun. So I think if you're, it almost felt like karaoke again, in the sense where if you're going out to karaoke with friends, if you're not the person hitting every note the way it's supposed to sound, at least have fun while you're doing it so that everybody is engaged. And it looked like they did it. Again, kind of like the Shaggy performance suit. A lot of choreography in this one, which I dug. So, you know, it was really well made. I liked it. I think it was one of the, you know, better ones. Middle of the, if we were to rank all the songs, definitely in the middle of the pack. One of the better ones.
It's funny that you say that because from what I heard, he did this performance for, you were talking about Rebel Wilson. He actually did.
I think he was the guy that did
it.
In the Hollywood Bowl show. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So, my only biggest complaint was that you're right, he embodied it. And I know this is just starting to get technical, but at the end, I don't know, maybe it was getting too loud, but I couldn't understand what he was saying, like near the end, and that maybe that's because it was a hectic, like him zooming around. Mm-hmm. But when you could hear him, when he was doing his vocal, I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
You know?
He, like with everybody else, it was like, he got to ham it up.
Yeah.
And he took that opportunity and ran with it.
Yeah.
Like, so if anyone else was like, I wonder what John Stamos is up to, that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you think this is pretty good, I can do similar stuff.
What's funny is that he's the only character that was actually able to break character.
Yeah, he fourth walled it.
Yeah, at the very end, he talks about, oh, I knew it should have been Prince Albert. I mean, Eric. Prince Albert! <It's> Albert.
I knew it should have got a Prince Albert.
But I thought it was, it wasn't like the best performance. It's not like, Yas Queen. But it was
still top of it.
It was Yes Chef. We Chef.
We Chef. So he went to Ratatouille afterwards.
Turned into Remy all of a sudden. Okay. All right, so after that we have Kiss the Girl. The last major song we have Kiss the Girl with the returning Shaggy and his red outfit. What'd you guys think of that one?
There was one thing I didn't like.
What's that?
There's one part in Kiss the Girl that always has to be there.
Exactly. Exactly.
They couldn't get anybody to do that.
They just like hummed it. Somebody hummed it or something.
You know what? I think
I was like, what the hell?
It's like the album version of Kiss the Girl doesn't have Scuttle Warbling.
Oh yeah.
You know, like the album version doesn't have the
Yeah.
That thing. Like, cause that for me, those little, it's the little things that always make the song, you know, that's how peculiar we are on things. But it was there.
The other thing I didn't like was that this was your chance to finally have Ariel and Prince Eric actually do something aside from singing. And they cut out the one part where it's like the key part where it's like, you know, what's your name? Like your name. And that was something that they could have done instead. Yeah. They looked awkwardly at each other, you know, and then it just went up. So, again, one of my favorite songs, I think they could have done better.
Yeah. And I hate to say it too, not to be picky, but I don't think it didn't feel like Ariel and this Prince Eric had any chemistry.
You know, I don't think they ever talked. That was the most time they spent with each other. Yeah. Okay. Boat time.
Boat. Jeez. We Chef.
Now someone needs to do an edit of them riding on the boat and Boats and Hoes playing in the background. Because that would have actually be more entertaining than what those two produce. I mean, it's passable because that scene itself, unless it goes full out animated, where like you have fish and you have plants and everything,
shooting
and
over
birds
the boat
and doing all those kinds of things, which they could have done because they were able to physically do it with a lot of the other scenes, but they chose not to. They chose to simplify it and keep it, like Dennis said, like a real, actually, you know, more realistic love story. Mm-hmm. But if the whole deal with the show was go all out on every musical number, then they, you know, at least should have done it on that one.
Yeah.
Now, there are two musical numbers that they added, and I'm almost positive it's actually in
music. I think the musical.
In the musical. One is a solo by Prince Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Something about her voice, I think.
Yes.
Right, yes.
And you were talking about it. Prince Eric, great voice.
Yeah. That scene himself where he's talking to that guy and then he does the voice, I was like, first of all, yeah, jarring because not in, you know, the thing that we're familiar with. And yeah. If it is in the musical, and then I look forward to seeing that in the musical. But that scene itself, I was like, oh, this is a new song. It's I don't know it, obviously, right now. We literally just saw it. But it was catchy enough and it was strong enough that I would enjoy, you know, listening to it again.
And I enjoy the fact that they use Alan Menken's, like, tune.
Yes.
You could it's kind of like what they did with Beauty and the Beast, where they took the familiar notes and they transformed it into their song. And that's kind of what they did. And so I really did appreciate that one. And then the other one was the duet between Ariel and Prince Eric,
yes.
I honestly, I've been trying to remember what the name of the song is. But it was them singing to each other. I thought that was Ali's best performance.
Okay.
Maybe. Yeah. And I think it was because of the fact that it was new. There was no expectation.
Oh, yeah. That's
what
you mean.
We didn't need to hear certain notes. And her voice, I think that one made me understand that she actually did have a great voice.
Yeah.
You know, not the best, but still a really, really good voice.
There's a just like a quick aside before we finish up, but there's a YouTube video that I watch frequently, and this is how pathetic I am, but they have this thing that contrasts the live Disney performances with, like, you know, studio recordings. And her voice when she does, you know, How Far I'll Go compared to how the the album, the soundtrack version sounded, it's like, it's pretty accurate because, when you're not as trained as she was, apparently, it's like, that's the only way you know how to sing it. So everybody else, like, on their versions, like, even Mandy Moore, when she was doing, you know, Let's They See the Light, it's like, you can hear the difference between what she's singing live and what she's doing for the soundtrack. And just, it's just interesting to see that, you know, her voice was able to be strong enough that they would consider her to even play one of the, you know, Ariel does have just that one song. Also, forgetting that she did that, the note thing at the very end of Poor Unfortunate Souls, which I think was the best visual part of the thing, where they had the katana thing, blades, like, drawing in her soul and everything, and then, like, stealing it, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then, yeah.
Which, kind of wrapping up this whole thing, you know, there were certain things that that surprised me, and certain things that I liked that I did, and I didn't like. One thing is that it seemed like they really went all out, but it just also didn't seem like they tried hard enough. My perfect example was Flounder. You know, there was a tweet that I saw, and not because I'm on Twitter.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, like,
Yahoo, and
they embedded a link
to a tweet, and the link went something like, like worker, you know, or Disney worker. You know, we lost the flounder puppet, and then Disney boss, quick, let's go to Michael or something like Smart. Go to this store.
Smart Final.
We'll go to Party City and just get
a fish.
Here's $5 and get a fish. That's what it seemed like. I mean, even Lewis, even though he only saw it for a little bit, that was one of the very first things, and it was jarring that they couldn't get better things. I mean, the whole Flotsam and Jetsam was pretty cool.
Yeah,
you know, that was pretty cool. But there were I don't know if you guys have been to Disneyland when they did a performance for Finding Nemo, and they actually have headsets where it's Dory and it's Marlin and everything.
Oh, wow,
and
okay.
And you know, it's puppets on their heads and their arms, so it looks like it's fish.
Yeah,
and I was like,
yeah, they didn't even try.
Why couldn't you even try something like that?
It's right there in the lot.
It's literally like those fry guys from McDonald's back in the days.
Yeah,
and it was just bouncing in the, like on a stick.
Yeah,
like with at least okay, so. With all, that's what I kind of figured how all the fish were going to look like. But then in Under the Sea, they ended up being, you know, kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then, except for the Duke of Soul, yeah. But, yeah. Like, but everybody else, it was like, yeah, you know, they took time to make them a little bit more detailed. And they were literally like, okay, we got these extra minion parts. And let's make Flounder not even fat. Like, yeah. That's like half of the appeal of Flounder is him, half the appeal. Of him being fat, and like, you know, he barely can fit into that anchor ring. And
which, for some reason, Ariel fit easily. Why the hell?
That scene always gets me. Like, even when I was watching it yesterday, I was like, okay, Flounder, I'm gonna take about 10 seconds to get through this thing. Ariel, no problem. I'm like, how anorexic is Ariel? They're like,
how big is this fool?
Flounder is just obese.
No, like, morbidly obese.
Flounder, that's not the first Sebastian, guys.
Oh, man.
That's right. Cannibalism. That's not really cannibalism. It's a different species.
Yeah.
But eating your friends.
Let's wrap it up, I guess. Overall, this is the first. And at least I think it's the first Disney.
Yeah.
This is the first version of Disney that Disney's done this. First and foremost, what do you guys think? And B, based on that grade, do you think that this is going to be something that they're going to do moving forward?
I thought it was a solid first step. I don't think it was great. I think, unfortunately, you know, Disney productions have the burden of that Disney name. Like, when you put the name Disney in front of something, you have, you know, it comes with some weights and expectations. So you kind of expect higher production value or higher, you know, better costumes and all that good stuff. Not that I've seen every one of these live musical shows on TV, but from the ones that I've seen already, like, this is middle of the ground. So, I mean, so like I said, solid first step. Hopefully, moving forward, the next productions, if they do make more of these, will be better, or like Harold kind of suggested, is like go all in. You know, like if I understand, you know, trying to make it look like you're under the sea is a lot harder for a stage show, but you know, maybe for Aladdin or for Lion King or for Beauty and the Beast in like a few years when their 30th anniversary comes up, you know, those are on land. You know, the sets will be easier to pull off, and maybe they can make it a lot nicer. And like I said, go all in. I get the fact that they did the whole half movie, half live performance thing, but I'm not sure if that experiment, you know, landed as well as they would have wanted. So, yeah.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. Mm-hmm. Like we said, Little Mermaid's still one of my favorites. I know your friend who was on our podcast didn't care for it all too much. Shut up. But the concept...
Wait, are we not allowed to say people's names anymore?
I don't remember anymore.
No, yeah, I'm just saying, Kara, you know, shut up.
Okay.
I was going to joke with Lewis and Clark. But anyway, you know,
I can't remember names.
Exactly.
Kevin James. Remember that guy?
For now, when next time we're recording, we'll be like,
Kevin Smith?
Paul Blart. You didn't even call him Paul Blart, you called him Mock Up. But anyways, the concept was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the execution for the most part, like we said. We're obviously nitpickers because we can use that word.
If we don't nitpick, we have no podcast.
Exactly.
Right? It was great.
That's what we do.
Everything's amazing.
And yeah, this is, you know, we agree with everything. No, it's like you obviously heard my opinions on certain things, but execution-wise, for a first attempt at anything, I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. I would watch it. I definitely watch it again. I'm really excited now that this concept has come into fruition, that there is a possibility, like we said, for more Disney classics to come out like this. I really hope that they don't do the thing where they're literally just casting people that sound like previous actors, and mm-hmm. they let them do their own voices themselves. So it's like, you know, we have Beauty and the Beast coming up. If they ever let, you know, Emma Watson close to that stage, I will personally tackle her because, well.
So wait.
You're gonna self-separate her from herself,
or whatever she's calling herself. Ali is Ariel, way better than Emma Watson's.
Oh, no. For Jesus Christ!
Okay.
Not even in the like. There was, I tweeted this. Beauty and the Beast live action and Beauty and the Beast animated were showing at the same time over the weekend.
There's no contest.
There's no contest at all.
There's no contest.
And I was trying to get it to sync up, because I'm a douchebag like that. And so I ended up putting on YouTube Emma Watson's version while I'm watching the animated version. And I was like, dude, this is so bad.
Except for one.
What?
One song.
What song?
One song.
What song did she do good?
No, not her, but that movie, one song, great song. Gaston.
Oh yeah, that was
they actually.
That's because that guy
Luke Wilson. Sweet guy with names.
Stop. Luke James.
Luke Blart. But yeah, besides that, I mean, if they got Luke Evans to play like Gaston in that library, dude, I'd watch the hell out of that version.
Okay. Well, that's
your and your.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'd watch. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not. I'm going to be fast forwarding through the animated version.
Just because we've seen it.
Because we've seen it already. But I've even before this, I've actually watched. I watched it with Lewis because he needed to see it. I actually watched it before I watched Lewis the third viewing.
Wow! Didn't I send you guys a link?
Oh no, I didn't actually click on it because.
You've seen it already.
I don't trust your.
I'm not going to send you Prime.
You know, I work, so.
One of these days, I'm going to send you a hidden link.
And all of a sudden,
that's when you get busted.
It's on my system. Okay, well, that's it for us today. I hope you enjoyed our episode. You know, as usual, if you liked what you hear, if you like what we said, you know, please comment and make sure that you like us, you share. If you didn't like what we said, you know, this is
A free country?
A free country, I guess.
Unless you're not in a free country.
This is Fat Man Beyond, and
also,
I'm Kevin Joe.
Also, if you have, you know, if you think that we, obviously we have our opinions, and we'd like to hear yours as well, so, you know, feel free to shoot us emails or comment on any of our posts. Any
at of our Age emails? Of Spades.
Yeah, that too.
The other thing that also, I guess this is kind of news, when this episode drops, in a couple of days, we're actually going to be attempting something we've never tried before. We're actually doing a meetup. We're going to be doing a...
Our first, what do you call this?
Watch party?
A watch party? Okay, cool. Yeah. So if you have any watches, whether it's digital or analog, bring it.
I'm out of here. We made it almost through this whole episode.
One dad joke.
Before I quit.
Whoa. This is not the first dad joke in this
episode. Yeah, but watch party. Yeah.
Okay, cool. But yes, we are going to be doing a watch party for Mandalorian because at this
point...
Not
just any Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian. Oh, it's not Sabine?
That's my
Mandalorian. What about you?
Okay. Django, I don't know.
So if you want to, it is going to be this Wednesday.
You're right, this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at We Are Heroes. No. We can't be heroes. Sorry, Julio and Riz, for butchering your name. Actually, these articles are like killing me. Who watches The Watchmen? Part of your world?
We can be heroes. Lou watches The Watchmen was the most obvious thing.
It was a slam dunk.
And I was missing one word that made it
in my
perfect.
Defense, Eric did me a favor and photoshopped the whole thing. So, like, I should have been clear.
But going back, so we
Can Be Heroes, the comic book shop on Devonshire and DeSoto, will be having a watch party starting at 7 p.m. You know, we'll have pizza, we'll have the Mandalorian. Depends on if my direct deposit hits.
Totino's! Totino's pizza
rolls! We only have a pizza roll!
Hey, pizza rolls are amazing. Hey,
you know, yeah, but what if it's just one pizza roll per person?
Would you rather have no pizza rolls or one pizza roll?
I'd rather have no pizza rolls than a pizza roll.
I don't know.
That's mean.
There's a McDonald's next door, dude.
So,
a fry per person.
So, contact us, email us, or just head to... We Can Be Heroes in Granada Hills, and we would
Chatsworth.
Uh-huh. And we would love you to be there. You know, and as usual, we kind of want to shill our other sites and everything. We of course have our website, Two Fanboys and a Filthy Casual. Lewis is really on a roll here and really trying to.
I'm trying to keep my spot here, trying to show
that he deserves to be in this podcast. And he has a bunch of really good articles. Check it out. And, of course, we have all our old episodes there.
Mm-hmm. And on Facebook, you can find us Two Fanboys.
Two Fanboys and James.
Two Kevins and a Filthy James. So, Two Fanboys and a Filthy Casual. Every time the podcast goes live, we'll be posting our links there. Any fun news, memes, anything that's out there on the internet, we'll be sharing it there.
And then on our... Instagram and Twitter at @2fanboys1casual. And then also, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play Music, and now Spotify. Thank you to all our new listeners on Spotify. Also, still find it ironic that Lou is good at writing articles, just keeps on forgetting to use articles.
Ah. Wait, as in words?
Yes.
Yes. As in the or
of
a.
For where?
Never mind.
Okay. I missed it.
Yes, you did.
Okay, cool. He's the one who said The Mandalorian. Isn't that an article?
We're talking about the Lou watches The Watchmen thing.
Oh, Lou watches Watchmen.
I don't know. I don't know why out of everything that one disturbed me the most. Because it was the biggest slam dunk in history for like creativity, and then it's just like one word, bro.
Turns out Lewis is a fake Watchmen fan.
He just watches
Filthy
Watchmen.
Casual. I just like Regina King. Let's be honest, dude.
She was great in Friday.
Yes, she was.
And she was good as Mercedes in
Jesus Christ.
Oh God. And it goes
maybe.
Well, that is it for us today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. As usual, this is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
This is Harold. So do you just refer to her as Regina? She's a king.
Because you do not believe in
monarchy.
That's why I call her Mercedes.